From PRI, Public Radio International in Los Angeles, I'm Tavis Smiley. We'll spend this hour honoring the life and legacy of Natalie Cole, the 9-time Grammy-winning vocalist who died on New Year's Eve at the age of 65. The daughter of the legendary Nat King Cole and an icon in her own right, Natalie Cole will be forever remembered for hits like This Will Be, I've Got Love on My Mind, and, of course, Unforgettable, her virtual duet with her late father.
Unforgettable, though near or far.
Natalie Cole appeared many times on my programs over the years, and later this hour you'll hear what turned out to be my very last recorded conversation with her from 2013. But first, we go back to 2010 when Natalie Cole joined me for a deeply personal and candid conversation shortly after receiving a life-saving kidney transplant.
She's out with a new book, a very personal book, about the events of the past couple of years, including her life-saving kidney transplant and the death of her sister, Cookie. The book is called, appropriately, Love Brought Me Back, A Journey of Loss and Gain. Natalie, when I say it's nice to see you, I mean it's nice to see you.
Thank you, honey. Yeah. Thank you.
When you were last here, I started praying really hard when you left. You look great, as you always do, but
thank
I could tell you were sick. You had been diagnosed at that point, and I think you were about to start the dialysis.
Yeah.
But when you were here last time, I recall just saying to myself, I don't know if that's the last time I'll ever get a chance to interview Natalie Cole.
I know.
And so I'm just thrilled over the moon that you're still here.
Isn't that something?
And back on the show.
I tell you, God must still have some stuff for me to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not even know that I was that close to leaving here.
Yeah. How close were you?
Let's see, maybe about 8%. My kidney function had less than 8% left. That's how close.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was on dialysis within like 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to jump to the book in a second here, but first of all, the title, you and I were just talking before we came on the air here. One of my favorite DJ Rogers. Hey, DJ. Love me some DJ Rogers. And one of my favorite DJ songs is Love Brought Me Back.
Yeah, I was in New York.
Yeah.
And I heard it over the speakers, and I said, that is the title of my book.
Yeah. When you heard the song, you just knew it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because it just makes sense. Because it did. I mean, you know, when you look back on certain things, you know, you can kind of ask yourself, how did I get through that? And the truth is, you didn't get through it. People brought you through it.
Yeah.
Energy, good energy, prayers brought you through it. You know, and that's how I knew.
Yeah. Speaking of DJ, one of my other favorite DJ songs, you did a beautiful cover, the best cover I've ever heard. Say You Love Me.
Oh, thank you.
That's a
thank
beautiful
you.
Song.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but you're a treatment.
Now, see, you're going to make me think, well, maybe we should start putting it back in the show.
No.
Because somebody else, actually Denzel, I ran into Denzel a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me how he loved the song I used to do called Joey.
Yeah, I know that's
it.
Yeah.
We put it back in the show.
Yeah.
I said, this is for Denzel.
It's a great song. Great song. So you were last year, and it wasn't that long after your appearance here that you went into the dialysis. Mm-hmm. How did you end up with the kidney?
Well, as you know, it's a long list, actually, especially in big cities, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. And they actually recommend that you go on another list than a smaller city besides the big one. So we had already tested my family members, even my son, bless his heart. He was not a match. We just got a call. I was you know, with my sister when the call came to say that they did find a perfect match and that the kidney was specifically designated for Natalie Cole. And so the hospital kind of flipped out because, again, with that long list, how did I get to the top of the list all of a sudden? But what had happened was, serendipitously, a woman had taken care of me for one day at Cedars at the hospital. I was in there for in-and-out procedure. And she saw me on Larry King, along with the niece, her niece, whose kidney I ended up getting because this girl passed away a couple of weeks later. And she remembered and she said, I would like to go to the family and ask them, would they consider donating my niece's kidney to Ms. Cole?
You said two or three things I got to go back and unpack.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's so much
it's
in
crazy.
There. Let me slow this thing down. Let me slow this down and go back. Before we get to the kidney, and the phone call about the kidney, when you mention your sister, I know one of your sisters fairly well, one of the twins.
Right.
So you have a few sisters.
Yes.
The sister you're speaking of is no longer with us.
Right.
Yeah,
Cookie.
Carolyn Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say you were with Cookie, you have to color that in a little bit more. You weren't just with her.
Right. No, she was in the hospital.
Exactly.
She had actually managed to keep her illness away. And now that I realize she was sick for a while and probably didn't say anything to me because she was worried about me.
Mm-hmm.
That's her. That's the kind of woman that she was.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out that she was fighting lung cancer. And finally, when she couldn't keep it from her family anymore because she started to show physical symptoms, started to swell up and her pallor, her skin started to change. And when I saw her, the last time I saw her alive was Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call that she wasn't doing well, and that's when I went over the house. It was Mother's Day. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, and I'm thinking, okay, she didn't feel good, but she still wouldn't say what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the doctor the following week, and he said, you got to do chemo like yesterday. So I knew then that it was very, very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew my sister wouldn't do it because she was into homeopathic and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the natural way to do things. So she ended up having another crash, and they took her to the hospital. I was there with her. And I get a phone call on my son's cell from the other hospital that they found a match.
Mm. So you're with your sister who is dying
mm-hmm.
when you get a phone call
that
there's a kidney specifically for you
mm-hmm.
to save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you process that? Your sister's dying. I know you don't want to leave your sister.
No.
But you got a kidney. And did they give you a time frame by when you got to come
claim
it?
Yeah, about 2 hours.
You have 2 hours
yeah.
to get to the kidney.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So your sister's dying. You got 2 hours to get to the kidney. So what do you do? How do you process it? Obviously, you went to get it. But how do you process that?
Well, actually, there were two phone calls. The first call came in around 1 in the morning
mm-hmm.
when I was at the hospital, or maybe about 12. I went home because I'd been there most of the evening
mm-hmm.
To try to get a little sleep. Where Cookie was called me back, said, come back. She's really going, we think, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I went back, and the other hospital called again. And this time they said, it was like 4 o'clock, and they said, we need to get you there at 6:30. By then there was like 20, 25 people in the room, you know, all our family, friends, cousins, nephews. Nobody was in the position to be able to hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
We were just focused on Cookie. So I called my business manager. I needed someone who had some different kind of focus,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was one of the few people that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him what was going on. I woke him up 4 in the morning. I said, what should I do? And he was like, 30 seconds, go for it. He said, you got to go for it. Cookie would want you to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kiss her goodbye.
Yeah. Cookie passed away when? Relative to your claiming the kidney.
She actually passed away 4.5 hours after I left her.
Okay. So your family knew before you went into surgery that she had passed.
Right.
But they didn't want to tell you that.
They didn't tell me,
Because they didn't want you to go into surgery with that kind of burden.
Exactly.
Right. So you find out after you come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do you process that? I mean, you have a kidney. We'll come back to the kidney in a second. But you have a kidney, but on the other side of the successful surgery, you learn that your dear sister has passed.
Yeah,
so.
It's the grief and the feelings of different emotions is so powerful that it takes days to really put everything in some kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a woman of faith, and I know that God's hand has been in my life always.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was, like, really so extraordinary. And I just had to keep praying, you know, that he knew best,
mm-hmm.
that this all happened for a reason. But I still had, you know, I had survivor's guilt, and because you have to remember that two people were gone.
Mm-hmm.
The young woman whose kidney I have, as well as my sister.
Her name was Jessica?
Jessica.
Yeah.
And so two lives are gone, and one life is saved. You know, so that is a process in itself of how, you know, why me,
mm-hmm.
you know, or why not, you know.
But that does make you feel guilty, though, or has at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was tough because I'd never felt anything like that before. I'd never experienced anything like this before. You know, I just couldn't, I really couldn't figure it out. I had a tough time with it.
Yeah. You said the hospital freaked out, and I know what you meant by that.
Yeah.
The way the kidney transplant system works.
Yes.
You can't buy these kidneys.
No.
You can't cheat and jump to the top of the list.
At least not here in the U.S.
Not supposed to.
You know, they're selling them all over the place,
right.
But yeah.
So obviously, when someone famous like Natalie Cole is down the list and jumps to the top,
sure. It
would cause some alarm.
Absolutely.
For how Natalie Cole jumped. What do you know about, tell me a bit more then about why, at least why they told you that the family specifically donated this kidney for Natalie Cole?
Well, first of all, probably because the woman who made the request was a nurse, mm-hmm. at Cedars. I had been her patient for a day. And the facility that, the organization that facilitates organ transplants, mm-hmm. organ donations, is called One Legacy. They came to the house not long after Jessica passed. And Aunt Esther just happened to be there. This was Esther is the name of the nurse. Mm-hmm. She just happened to be there the day that they came. And they said, we know that Jessica's a donor. The whole family, as a matter of fact, is a donor, our donors. Mm-hmm. And she said, I would like to, you know, put in my 2 cents. I know a woman who is in need of a kidney. And since Jessica's a donor, I'd like you guys to consider giving her one of Jessica's kidneys. And her name is Natalie. And that's all they knew. And it turns out when they did find out it was Natalie Cole, the mother, Jessica's mom, knew who I was. But the rest of the family really wasn't that familiar with me.
You guys sent them a care package of Natalie Cole records.
Oh, no. No, no, wait. No, wait. No, 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 no. But check
and
this out.
And Natalie Cole records.
But check this out. What happened was, after all of this, and we met and da-da-da,
right.
In Jessica's belongings, CD of Unforgettable.
Oh, so Jessica knew. She had the Unforgettable CD. Wow.
Isn't that something? I was just blown away. I was just... I can't...
Do you?
I don't know. It's just so crazy.
You call it serendipity. Some call it 6 degrees of separation. Some call it God. Mm-hmm. But do you recall, you referred to her as Aunt Esther, do you recall having been served by this nurse on that one day you were in the hospital?
Yes, I remember
you
her.
You remember?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
I remember we ordered root beer floats, and she was laughing because my girlfriend was there with me, mm-hmm. and we ordered... French fries and grilled cheese sandwiches. I'm sitting up on dialysis because, mm-hmm. obviously on dialysis you can eat.
Yeah.
You know, so I do recall her. Not as well as my girlfriend did, mm-hmm. but I did recall her. So when I realized the way it came, I was like, geez, she was my nurse for like 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And out of that, she just liked me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she knew who I was, and I could have been the diva and, mm-hmm. you know, all that. You just never know who's
yeah.
watching you.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could, if I had been another kind of person, she would have said, oh, let her get her own kidney.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Or just having a bad day.
Yeah.
Which you were. I mean,
which I was.
Dialysis isn't a good day.
I had many
exactly.
of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, she just remembered me as being lovely and, And her and Jessica were watching Larry King together.
Mm-hmm.
When she said, oh, I took care of that lady. I really wish that we could help her get a kidney. And Jessica was there with her.
Yeah. You raised this issue in the book, and it's a bit of an impolitic question to ask, but you know I adore you, and I want to ask it anyway. And I ask it lovingly, of course. And again, because you reference it in the book, you believe that your illness, your hepatitis C, you believe was brought on most likely by your drug use back
mm-hmm.
in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You've been clean, sober for a long time. But mm-hmm. back in the day when you were doing drugs, is most likely you think the way you contracted this hepatitis C. So how does it make you feel when, through your own misbehavior, because of your own misbehavior, you end up contracting something,
mm-hmm.
and a kidney that could have gone to somebody who's done nothing to damage their body mm-hmm. ends up coming to you?
I don't think I ever thought of it like that.
Yeah.
I think of it in kind of two parts.
Mm-hmm.
The hepatitis, clearly my responsibility. I'm totally accountable for that. It's just extraordinary that it stayed in my body for that long.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, I should have been dead. I think that when you are, once you get sober and you're in a program that teaches you, you know, not to beat yourself up too much about the kinds of things that you have caused, mm-hmm. you know, mostly to yourself, even though it causes a lot of people a lot of pain around you, you know. But there's only so much that you can take of beating yourself up, mm-hmm. holding yourself accountable, blaming yourself, you know. And just the fact that I survived it still lets me know that, you know, God saw something redeeming in me in spite of myself. Mm-hmm. You know that saying, God takes care of babies and fools. Mm-hmm. This fool. I'll tell you, he is worn out.
Yeah. A whole bunch of us in that category.
You know what I'm saying?
I know I am.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I asked that question because I want to get your response to that, obviously. But the flip side of that question is, and this is the way I read it, that God oftentimes blesses those of us who have platforms to tell the blessing, to share the blessing, to let others know. I mean, you now get a chance to travel the world and to talk about organ donations,
yep.
and spread love through your music. I mean, there's so much good that comes out of the fact that you got that kidney.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything that I've been through, it seems that it's important for me to share it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't know, for some reason, you know, my life is public in the sense of what I do, but I'm really not a, you know, big, you know, mm-hmm. personality, you know, but for some reason this is my ministry, if you will. You know, and I stopped questioning it a long time mm-hmm. ago because so many things have happened.
Yeah.
Way too many things have happened. And things that perhaps for another person would have been just too much.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm stronger, first of all, than I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better than I thought I was. And I'm really, really wise and strong. And I'm just really good at sharing things with people. They just get it with me. You know,
yeah.
I'm just right there with them. Mm. You know,
I hear you, of course, on my iPod just about every day.
Yeah.
Or regularly. So I'm always hearing you in my headphones. I've not heard you live in a little bit.
Oh.
I raised that to ask what all of this has done to the instrument. How the pipe sounded.
I'm telling you, Tavis, not one ounce has been touched.
Wow.
The gift is just still there. Sparkles. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
That picture right there, the one in mm-hmm. the purple, was my first time at the Hollywood Bowl, back on stage.
Nice dress.
Thank you.
Don't know how the voice sounds, but the dress is gorgeous.
Shut up. It was a beautiful dress, but I was so nervous. I don't think I've been this nervous in probably
20 years. You don't get stage fright when you've been doing this as long as you have.
I still get it.
Wow.
I still get it, but this night was, like, intense.
Why, you were nervous because you didn't know if the voice was going to hold up?
I didn't know anything. I just felt like I was floating. I just couldn't believe I was alive. I was well. I was healthy. I'm here at the Hollywood Bowl. It's, like, sold out. It just everything is just perfect, you know. And when I stepped out there on that stage and my voice just, whew, I mean, it was like, thank you, God.
Mm-hmm.
You're amazing. And it's just really strong. It's great. It really is a gift,
yeah.
You know.
And how do you describe what it feels like? not just when the voice holds up. You describe that, but when you walk out on stage, I assume that when you walked out, the audience must have gone crazy when you Natalie Cole is back.
Yeah.
She's on stage.
I'm home.
Yeah, you're at home.
Yeah.
You're at the venerable Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
So how do you describe what you felt from the audience that night when you walked out?
So much care, mm-hmm. so much love. I mean, to feel that from a crowd of people, most of them are strangers, even though you got your friends,
mm-hmm.
and you know, but the majority of these people really don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
And they just pour out this, you know, go for it, Nat. We're behind mm-hmm. you. You got a girl, you know, and I could do no wrong. And it's an amazing feeling for an entertainer to get out there and have that from the audience. you know, first of all, just because they love what you do. But then when they know you've come back mm-hmm. from something really devastating, it's like, bravo. Mm-hmm.
You know. So here's a silly question. Maybe not silly, but interesting perhaps. So what role did Nat King Cole play in all of this? I mean, the deceased Nat King Cole.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm getting
yeah,
at.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your daddy saying to you or doing for you? What did he play during all of this?
You know, I think that Dad was, first of all, my father led by example. He didn't do a lot of talking mm-hmm. about the world, politics, you know, how people are, how crazy
that's
people
that's
are.
Because he sang so much better
yeah.
than talking.
He really did. He really did. That was his way of communicating.
Yeah.
You know, he led by example. I think that, had he been here, I think he wouldn't have left my side.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been right there. He would have probably been running back and forth between me and Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because both of us were his heart, you know. So it would have been tough on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your father died when you were?
15.
15. Mm-hmm. So, in truth, you knew Cookie a whole lot longer.
Mm-hmm. I did. And I must say, I'm glad that you asked that question because I was surprised at how deeply I grieved her passing, even more so than my dad's.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You knew
it was, wow. Yeah. It's still going on. I still feel, I mean, the emotion is like right there,
yeah.
you know, for her. Because we really did. We had 50-something years together, you know. And, I mean, we had some great, great years. I mean, she turned me on to so much great music mm-hmm. that I'm doing now, you know. Great movies, great poetry. You know, she wasn't into fashion. I was the fashionista. But,
okay.
but everything else, you know, great food.
Yeah.
You know, she just had so much to do with you know, a lot of the woman that I became, you know, and my career.
Yeah. I would assume, I know you would not wish your ordeal on anybody. maybe not even your worst enemy.
My worst enemy.
Yeah. So then what's the advice?
Although, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, think about that, huh?
I got a few.
Yeah, we all do. That said, here's the exit question. So what's the abiding lesson that you take away for the rest of your life for having been so close to death?
Mm. Well, it's very trite, and it sounds really corny. Mm-hmm. But when people say, try to make every day count, honey, they are. So it is so serious.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And it's hard to do that because you get caught up so much in living. But, you know, sometimes it's not even about you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found out. That even though this happened to me and I went through a lot, somehow I felt it still wasn't about me. It was about showing what it's like to, you know, be used.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was being used, you know, and that somehow I just might make get out of this, you know, and then what am I going to do with it?
From PRI, Public Radio International in Los Angeles, I'm Tavish Smiley. We continue now with our tribute to the life and legacy of Natalie Cole, who died of congestive heart failure on New Year's Eve. She last appeared on my program in 2013 in part to introduce a new album, Natalie Cole en Español, released after her recovery from a kidney transplant and inspired by the bond forged with the Latino family of her donor.
Let's listen to a cut from the CD.
Ven por Dios a darme ese beso tuyo. You still sound so good.
I do?
You do, but your daddy does too.
Well, of course.
No, you sound good. I was getting to that. I was just starting with your daddy saying he still sounds so good.
And we found footage of him singing that song in Spanish, which is like so very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
But you know, neither one of us is fluent in Spanish.
Yeah. Let me ask you to set your modesty aside for just a second where your father is concerned. I know you love your daddy. But the older you get and the more you hear his voice and you find treasures like these, what do you think of your father now?
I think he's still unparalleled.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that he came at a time when there was no one out there like him. He had a demeanor as well. I mean, when people talk about my dad, they don't just talk about his singing. Almost everyone wanted a chance to see him. And whether it was his television show, even though short-lived, or whether it was live performance, they loved his spirit, his demeanor. Mm-hmm. He was a really great man. You know, he was a good, he was a cool person. And people could get that from him.
I've never seen a picture, which is rare, and I'm sure there may be one or two in the family photo somewhere, but look at these pictures they're running through now. I've never seen a picture where your daddy didn't look cool. I mean, his style.
No question.
His style. So smooth.
And please, you know, with no offense, but Justin Timberlake has nothing on that hat.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Dad was sporting that a while ago, okay? Don't even try it.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just the smoothness of his voice. His whole style.
Yeah, the way he
his
dressed.
His whole aesthetic. The way
at home, same thing.
Same
he was
thing.
Very cool. Very cool.
Wow.
Except in his boxer shorts.
So how did this idea come to be?
This is a 10-year development, right. Really. After the success of Unforgettable, mm-hmm. you know, we started thinking around about what else, you know, could we do that would be, you know, magical. And my sister and I, at the time, you know, my sister passed mm-hmm. several years ago, but at the time, we started having talks with Capitol, with EMI, they were going through changes, and, mm-hmm. you know, timing is everything. So it's just taken that long to bring it to fruition now. And I was talking with David Foster about 3 years ago. I was out on tour with David Foster and friends, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, David, I'm thinking I'd really like to do a Spanish record. And he said, well, if anyone could pull this off, it would be you. And then 18 months later, he became the CEO of Verve Universal. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was going to sign me, but he did, because he just believed that much in the idea of this kind of a record coming out now.
Yeah. So now that you've done this, how difficult was it to do?
I had so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you, I'm blessed with a gift for accents.
Right.
Even though I don't speak Spanish fluently,
right.
because I thought we were going to need a coach,
right.
Especially for the songs that we chose. Mm-hmm. But Rudy Perez, my producer, he heard me sing Quizás, 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 and he said, you're fine. And so he just coached me through with a little bit of phrasing, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with my kidney.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. my Latino kidney.
Yeah.
From my donor family from El Salvador.
Yeah. See, I'm glad you went there because first of all, you look great, and obviously you sound great. How are you feeling?
I do feel good.
Yeah.
I feel terrific. I mean, it's really a miracle to go from, you know, one part of your life health wise, and then, you know, you never think you're ever going to feel the same again. You just want to be normal,
right.
so to speak. I mean, I'll never be normal, mm-hmm. but in the scheme of things, compared to how I was 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I'm doing real good.
does that, I was going to say a brush with death with you was more than a brush with death.
Yeah,
I
didn't even know how close I was to that. I just knew I didn't feel good.
Yeah, so it wasn't a brush with death. In your case, it was like you were knocking on death's door.
Yes.
How then does that encourage you, give you the impetus to push these kinds of projects higher up on your bucket list, as they say?
Right. Probably because it's like, God, are you going to give me a little more time
right.
to do this? And so that's the impetus.
Right.
You know, let's do this now. Let's right. not wait. Let's not wait till something else happens. What are we waiting for? Mm. You know, I'm older. I'm more seasoned. You know, if anybody can pull this off. And I still think of myself as an artist who needs to continue to explore. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to broaden my horizon internationally. And, you know, it really was almost a no-brainer to do Spanish record, not a French record, right. not an Italian, you know, but something like this.
What do we know? What do you know? What can you tell us about why this was a challenge that your dad accepted for himself?
My dad was persuaded to do this by his manager,
right.
whose name was Carlos Gastel. Mm-hmm. Carlos Gastel was Cuban. Mm-hmm. And I guess he just felt that dad could do this and that, you know, he ended up being the first American, black or otherwise, male or female, to go overseas, period,
right.
to do this kind of music. And he was, the response was, I mean, dad was over there in like 58 for that first Spanish record, mm-hmm. Cola Español. The response was so huge, he did two more records. Mm-hmm. He was in Havana for the next 20 years. You know, they still have a statue mm-hmm.
I've
of
seen
him
it.
In front of
the Nacional Hotel.
I've been
there.
You know,
it, yeah.
and it's just amazing. My sisters and I were just going through pictures at the Schomburg Museum mm-hmm. Last month of photos that my mom had donated. We had not seen these pictures before, and there are some amazing photos, Tavis. When he was in South America, when he was in Argentina, when he was in Havana, and the crowd just... The adoration on their faces for this man is just, it's really something to behold.
Yeah. It's one of the things I've always, and I want you to comment on this, one of the things I've always loved about music in Spanish is that even if you don't know what they're saying,
uh-huh.
it's sexy.
It is.
Oh man. It's sexy. It's smooth. It is soothing.
Yes, it
they
is.
Could be cussing me out for all I know.
That's right.
But it sounds good.
Yes,
you
it
know?
Does.
So tell me more about what it feels like to sing in Spanish.
I tell you, the first time I started hearing these tracks back and these vocals, I looked at my musical director, who always goes with me when I'm recording, and I said, I think I like myself singing in Spanish better than English.
Mm.
My voice just takes on this, because I don't know how much you've heard of the record, mm-hmm.
I've heard it.
You can tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like Natalie Cole, but then it doesn't sound like Natalie Cole. And I think the biggest compliment that I have received is that they're saying I don't sound like an American singing Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a bit of a Colombian. Whatever that means, mm-hmm. you know, it's something good, you know, but I love rolling these lyrics, these words off my tongue. You know, some of it is definitely challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I will definitely agree. But boy, once we get it,
yeah.
it is like you don't forget. You just can't wait to, it just feels good. You know?
Compare and contrast, now that you've had both experiences,
right.
compare and contrast for me, Natalie, sing with your father in English
uh-huh.
and singing with your father in Spanish.
I'm better.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what?
I'm better than he is,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, Mr. Cole is not here to defend himself.
Yeah,
he is not here to defend himself.
But see, the problem is that it's so funny. Because you should hear my producer, because he, you know, of course he was a huge fan of my father's, but
right.
he said, but phonetically, he had to do it phonetically. He said,
yeah.
his Spanish is not as good as yours.
Okay, let me ask another question here. Since your daddy again ain't here to defend himself, he'll let his little girl get away with that. Tell me more about the challenge of, or the joy, you tell me, of producing, singing with him in English on the Unforgettable project
right.
and in Spanish on this project.
Oh, this was a joyous feeling.
Yeah.
Unforgettable was bittersweet.
Right.
It really was. And it was the first time
mm-hmm.
as well. Since then, I think I get much more pleasure out of it
mm-hmm.
than I do pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still, though, I must say, when we do Unforgettable,
mm-hmm.
that one still...
Still gets you. Yeah.
Still does. Because, you know, we have nice video footage.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
everyone in that picture is gone.
Yeah.
You know, my sister, my mom, my dad.
Yeah.
It's tough, you know, but it's, but look what they left me. And my mom would be so thrilled if she could have, you know, stayed here long enough to hear some of this music. She would have loved it. She would have loved this project even more than the Unforgettable project.
Yeah. My heart went out to you. I was so just broken when I heard about your mother's passing a year ago.
It'll be just a year, July 9th.
89.
Yeah.
And yet I thought, I mean, sad as I was, I celebrated the fact that she had a long,
lovely,
lovely life.
Rich, very full life. Mm-hmm. And looked good doing it the whole time. Mm-hmm. My mom looked good. You know, she really did. And her humor got a little more funny as she got older, mm-hmm. you know, which I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, even as she was in the process of leaving, mm-hmm. you know, she still had some funny things to say, yeah. you know. And I really thank God that I had the opportunity to spend that time with her because, you know, I was traveling when mm-hmm. this happened. They told me about it when I was in Istanbul or something crazy. Right. And she asked for me. She said, "Where's Sweetie? When's she coming?" You know, and they said that she wouldn't get dressed until she heard I was coming. Otherwise, she was in her pajamas the mm-hmm. whole time. I thought that was so sweet.
Yeah. How are you, again, you look good and you said you feel good. How are you making decisions, not just about projects now in terms of in-studio stuff, but how are you making decisions about where you tour, how you tour, when you tour? How's that all working
out? Yeah, this project has really put everyone out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're really testing the waters on this one.
Has your band learned this stuff yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
They are having a ball.
Yeah.
One of my piano players actually also works for Arturo Sandoval.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So
he has the biggest.
Oh, he's fabulous.
Pipe.
I'll see him in a few weeks. But he, you know, he's also on this record.
Yeah.
And well, actually, he's on one of the bonus tracks. But Arturo is beyond. But, you know, we are really kind of feeling our way.
Right.
And thank goodness for the Latin department mm-hmm. of Latin Universal that they have jumped in and really kind of directing us as to where do we go, mm-hmm. where we go, how we go, where we need to be, what we need to be doing, you know, even right until down to what's the single going to be or mm-hmm. the first few songs or, you know, so they're really giving us a lot of direction. And that's important because I'm clueless. I have no idea, you know.
I said Arturo has, he has like the biggest horn ever.
And the biggest heart.
Big heart too.
He's a great guy.
To your point now about the Latin department helping you navigate this journey.
Yeah.
What have you learned so far? What are you learning? Not that you haven't been around the world anyway, but now you're singing stuff in their language.
Right.
What are you learning about that audience's appreciation?
Well, we haven't had a chance yet to perform this.
So you haven't done it yet.
Mostly Latino or Spanish audience.
So the band's learned it, but you ain't done it yet.
Well, we've performed them live, but here in the U.S., where not necessarily my audience is, mm-hmm. you know, it's an American audience.
How is the American audience responding to Natalie in Espanol?
I am telling you, their response is first like, you know, because I kind of set it up. You know, I said, I just finished recording a Spanish record. They go, oh.
Wow.
And then I said, I just want you to check this out. So I'll do like, quizás, quizás. And they all know that. We all know that one. So that kind of breaks them in a little bit, you know. And then I come with Acércate Más with Dad. And they go, oh, cool, you know. And then I do another song. And I think they like it. Mm-hmm. I think they like it. Yeah. I really do.
Are you excited, scared, intimidated? You fill in the blank. For the opportunity to do this in front of a Spanish audience in a country that speaks Spanish.
All the above.
Yeah.
I really am. I mean, it's like I said, I'm out of my comfort zone. Yeah. When I first walked into the studio with Rudy, you know, the first couple of days, I was like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. What have I done? Mm-hmm. You know, but something about it just felt right, you know, and he had some of his, you know, friends come in and listen, and they were like, yeah, it's great. And one of the things I think that we did right is that we did not go with music that nobody was familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
These are all Latin, traditional, authentic, back in the day, your parents' parents stuff, you know. And so when they hear, and radio is telling us that they haven't played this kind of music in so long because, you know, it's always been the, you know, as a matter of fact, they're saying that the Latin music is starting to get so Americanized mm-hmm. that, okay, I thought that was interesting.
That's the problem that everybody in the world makes. They all want to be Americanized. And that's the last thing the world needs is more of us.
I know.
Everybody wants to.
It's not necessarily good stuff.
Yeah, I got
it. It's just the American pop, rap, whatever. But it's not necessarily really good. Yeah. And a nice compliment from the president of Latin Universal, Jesus Lopez, was that this is what we need to hear again. We need to remind ourselves. Yeah. You know, of how beautiful this music is. So it's not unlike what we did with Unforgettable.
Right. You said something a moment ago, and I know what you meant by it, but I want to just press you on it a little bit to get more out of you on this. And that is this notion, at this stage in your career, at this stage in your life, at this age of your life, on the one hand, you admitted that you're out of your comfort zone. On the other hand, you said, but it feels so good.
It does.
Now, I raise that to ask you to say more about that, because there's so many people, for a variety of reasons, whatever their calling or profession or life's task is, we don't want to be pushed out of our comfort zones.
Right.
But in that, you have found a certain joy, I tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was talking to a few other artists. I went to a convention of radio people. I hadn't been in 30 years, probably. Mm-hmm. And it was so great to meet some of the DJs that used to play, still playing my music. But Daughtry was there from, the winner of American Idol.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about it. He was like, really? He said, I would be scared to death to do something like that. I said, you're an artist. You don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over. You can explore. That's what an artist does. Mm-hmm. I said, you might actually enjoy it. You know, Michael Bolton was there. He sang a couple of things in Spanish. Mm-hmm. You know, so it really just depends on where you want to go. I just think that it's boring to do the same thing over and over again and call yourself an artist.
See, I agree that that is ostensibly what an artist ought to have the liberty and the freedom and the agency to do.
And sometimes
to
it
explore.
Works, and sometimes it might not work.
But sometimes it doesn't work because your fans won't let you do it.
This is true.
How have you navigated this career?
I started off crazy.
Yeah.
I started off.
You started out with "This Will Be." I mean, come on, wasn't crazy. That was
and
a
then
hit
I
now.
Went to "Good Morning Heartache," and then I went to something else. And so I never wanted to be that, And I think that my fans have gotten
used to that.
Well,
since I mentioned "This Will Be," which I was just listening to yesterday on my
on
my iPod, when you hear that stuff from, I mean, you sing it, of course, but when you are in your car or wherever, you hear it on the radio from way back when.
Amazing.
Still
amazing to me. I can remember standing in the studio. I remember when I first heard the song from Chuck Jackson and Marvin, and how we all just jumped up in the air because we knew this was going to be a great song. And oh, gosh, and how much fun I still have, recording that song. I mean, what a great thing to happen, for a singer.
Yeah.
You know, just to have that one song, and everyone thought it was Aretha at first. And Aretha actually did it at Carnegie Hall. And, that's really my song.
Tell me how your family, your sisters and brothers.
My twin sisters are delightful. They're wonderful. My son is great. My whole family is doing really, really well. Yeah. Uncle Freddie's good. Still working like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. He's not going to stop until he actually falls over on the stage. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably me too.
Yeah.
We just love what we do, and we're very, very blessed.
So you said something now I want to go back and get, because I think you're probably, my sense is, knowing you as I do, that you're probably right about that. I don't see you stopping. You don't see yourself stopping?
No.
Yeah.
As long as this stays like the way it has been, I'm good.
Are you? I know you're thankful for it, but are you amazed by that? Are you impressed by that? That your chops have held up?
Well, that's what I
was
saying about the Spanish record, is that I'm more impressed with me singing Spanish than I am in English. My voice has this little lilt to it, and it's just got this little, and I'm like, wow, and it still sounds young and vibrant. And I was like, David Foster even said to me, he said, I can't believe that you still sound so good. Because I was even listening to some of my, some of my peers who, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's because they don't sing enough or they just kind of lost their whatever. Lost the mojo.
Well,
I don't know.
That top register is hard to hit, though, for a lot of people.
Still.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you like this enough to do another one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You could bet on it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I not only that, but it's going to be really interesting to do another one with some original Latin music
right.
that's actually been written
for you.
For me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it's going to be like, ooh, wow. You know, but what are we getting ourselves into here? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but it just feels right. I'm excited. As soon as I start doing the music on stage, I really do feel like I'm transported someplace else.
Yeah. I was thinking, it's hard. I guess this probably isn't true for everybody, and he would probably agree with this. But it's hard to imagine certain artists ever going wrong with David Foster. I mean, David is just.
I know. But David is picky.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he can basically envision what's going to happen
right.
before he makes that commitment. You know, yeah. and that's why I love him. We think alike. You know, he's picky. He's detailed. He's anal. He's, yeah. you know, he knows what he likes. He doesn't like to fail. I'm with you.
Speaking of David, PBS just went through its pledge period.
You know, he just got a star on the sideline.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Congratulations, David, on the star. Congratulations. speaking of David Foster, PBS just went through its recent pledge period, and I don't care how many times I flipped channels and I saw it on, I went back to watch it again, and uh-huh. that is David Foster with Andrea Bocelli in Portofino. Did you see any of this?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, my God.
I mean, first of all,
yeah, but you got Andrea Bocelli?
Oh, I have worked with Andrea probably at least half a dozen times already. He even asked me to do a show with him, a concert. I was mm-hmm. not able to make it, but mm-hmm. he's divine, mm-hmm. and I think that David is a great buffer because I think that Andrea, who is the ultimate artist, can be difficult,
mm-hmm.
but David is kind of like the buffer. Whenever I'm with Andrea, David's there,
mm-hmm.
so I can kind of, mm-hmm. you know, I can kind of mess a little bit with Andrea. And now we've gotten comfortable enough that we mm-hmm. have that kind of, you know, rapport with each other. It's just great. And God bless him, and God bless David for, you know, being okay with me having that beautiful song "Besame Mucho" on my record.
It's those classical guys.
I know.
I'm just being funny.
And he can hold a note longer than anybody,
yes,
and he revels in that.
That he can do. that he can do.
Yes, he can.
The new project from Natalie Cole is called Natalie en Español, and it's the first one, but not the last one. And Andrea's on here. Her daddy's on here. Arturo Sandoval is on here. And a bonus track. It's a great project, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
You can catch me weeknights on my television show on PBS. For more info on what I'm doing or to hear this show, past shows, or the Tavis Smiley Show podcast, visit TavisSmileyRadio.com. The Tavis Smiley Show is a news and opinion program produced and recorded in Los Angeles by SRP Productions in partnership with Public Radio International. Tony Marcano is our executive producer. I'm Tavis Smiley. This is PRI. Keep the faith.